Name is welcome to the last session of this meeting of the Philadelphia Society. My name is Larry Arn. I have a rank with the Philadelphia Society, and I can't remember what it is. I think I'm called factotum junior grade. Yesterday, Brad Watson had great fun with himself being an academic. I am a lower order than that. I am an academic administrator. And this weekend, I tell you the truth, the hot topic is a correspondence from our conference commissioner, athletic conference commissioner, a man of no discernible education. These are private meetings, correct? And the question is, shall the conference circulate a questionnaire to the students of our various campuses to solicit from them information about their race and their gender? And the need for this is written in the fact that this conference commissioner has, open quote, noticed some things, close quote. And whatever are these things that he has noticed makes him want to know the genders and races of our student body. Questions that Hillsdale College, as regards race, has never asked for 172 years now. And so we're all working hard because these things are stupid and also fraught with peril. Here's a place where you can make national news in a heartbeat. And then God knows what powers you will hear from, whether you take any money from the government or not. And I can, however, reassure the society that the Midwest is still the most conservative part of the country because the number of races is 9. I counted them this morning. And the number of genders on the questionnaire is only 8. And, you know, there are several aggrieved genders that will doubtless be coming forward, too. I congratulate Joe and Lenore for this meeting. They're both delightful to work with, I can tell you, and they're very skillful, and we should all give them a round of thanks. Our topic is towards a post-Reagan conservatism. I'm not going to talk a long time this morning because I take up all the time in the board meetings already. And there are complaints of that, and what do I care? I'm a college president. But I'll say this. This is Lenore lectures us, by the way, in panel notes, not to just harken back to Reagan all the time because we have to move on. What are we, whining dogs? But I will say we're supposed to talk about the future, and we conservatives, by definition, have to have something about the past that we like. And I have noticed that this particular meeting has had a lot of talk of the past, of predictions about the future in the past, including the worrisome and profound and beautiful remarks of Roger Kimball yesterday at lunch. I happen to know something about that year 1931-32 when Aldous Huxley was publishing Brave New World, because in that year, Winston Churchill published an essay called 50 Years Hence. And he didn't read, we know, because he wrote a letter to his wife about it, Brave New World, until 1958. But he talks about what's coming, and much of it is here now. And he says it's like the way he writes. He was a very good writer. It's fun and charming and light. And he had the gift, which, by the way, wouldn't it be such a blessing to have a little of it today, of talking about really serious things without seeming to take himself terribly seriously. And so this essay starts out with all the really cool stuff that's going to be invented and how convenient it's going to be. And then it turns to war and how inconvenient it's going to be to people who are on the receiving end of these new gadgets and how they may suffer in their millions more than they already have. And then he says, maybe we're going to make babies in a process where we make them for what we want them for. And that will change their status. Amazing, he saw all that coming. He actually said things like that as early as 1900. And then he says this really great thing, which I think we should all remember, take hope from. Winston Churchill believed in hope. And he saw all the troubles we've got today, and he feared them. He thought they were latent in the socialist movement. He wrote that first in 1898. The first thing he ever wrote about it was, it's going to destroy the family. That's what it will have to do. Because it won't be enough to nationalize the big industries. There'll still be all those stubborn inequalities that come out of family life. So what about that? And in 50 years hence, and in other places, he writes this thing too. He says, imagine in 16 or 17 generations, we've reached a place now where we can enjoy pleasures that have never been conceived. We can live as long as we want to live. We can go anywhere, any planetary that we want to go. What will be the good of all that? It will still arise in our heart the question, why are we here? What are we for? And the ache that we have from the longing to answer that question is what makes us not fit to live for pleasure alone or under despotism. Another place about the same time he said, it is at once the glory and the safeguard of mankind that it is easy to lead and hard to drive. Now, there's some chance that the American people are about to be overwhelmed by their government. It does look to me like that's the purpose. I think the current administration understands that it needs to do that to get its way, and I think it sets about it a purpose myself. And yet, on the other hand, is that going to work? Yesterday in the board meeting, we asked the question, is this society going to be here in 20 years and 50 years and 40 years? It's old now. It's time to raise questions like that. Maybe it can go. And of course, that dissolved into the question during the board meeting, is anything going to be here in 20 years or 50 years or 100 years? But the truth of the matter is, if the Philadelphia Society is a permanent activity, that is to say, if it was ever a natural thing to do and a divinely blessed thing to do for people to get together and talk about elevated stuff that doesn't necessarily describe how they're going to make a living on Monday morning, then that can only pass away with the species. So we should aim to keep doing what we're doing. And the activity of this will remind everyone who comes in contact with it that there's more to life than the current administration. We have four speakers, and they're great. And I'm going to introduce them all now, and then they're going to come up in the order that they're on your program. Lenore, who doesn't like, do you know her very well yet? Because you will. And she doesn't much like disagreement. You're going to do what she says. I am, anyway. I've known her for a long time. So she says, they're all coming up and they're wanting to change anything. And all means only two. But neither of those two is the first great man I'm going to introduce who can do anything he wants to do whenever he's here. He is a remarkable fellow. He comes from New York. He must have been born to extraordinary parents who would have profound reason to be proud of their children if they'd never had a son named Bill. He was in the Navy in the Second World War. He went to college and law school at Yale and seems to have survived that okay. He's been a senior manager of a corporation. He's been a member of the United States Senate. He's been a senior administrator in the Reagan administration. He's been a judge for a long time now in the D.C. Appellate Circuit. He filed a lawsuit that led to Buckley versus Vallejo, which is one of the protections of our remaining freedom of speech. Remember that freedom of religion and freedom of speech are in the same amendment, and politics are all about that amendment, which means they've worked their way up to the top now. Now they want to control that one. And this man filed a lawsuit and won it. That constitutes an obstacle still remaining to all that they want to do. He is a great man, and he's also one of the nicest men. And so I think because of his seniority and his service, we should violate the rule and applaud him now. I don't care if you do that for the others. They're all great, too. So now, this is kind of an opposite phenomenon to me, because Henry Olsen is, to me, a precocious boy. And that's just a sign that I'm really old, because I knew him when he was an undergraduate, and I was not. And here's what he was like. He was, he's got this capacious mind, and what he loved was electoral statistics. And so he could tell you about districts in California. And when he was, like, too young to rent a hotel room, he would go and do it anyway on election night, and he would find some way to fix up extra TVs. And, like, if the polls closed at 8 and the first exit poll was at 8:15, by 8:30 he knew who was going to be dog catcher in Santa Ana. And it was just kind of a whiz kid to watch him do this. And then darned if he didn't start becoming profound, like knowing serious stuff. And so he's gone on to a great career, which is in probably not quite mid-court course yet. He went to Claremont McKenna College, where I knew him first. He went to the University of Chicago Law School. He was a political consultant. He ran the conservative think tank in Pennsylvania. Don't I have that right, Henry? Mm-hmm. And then he's been a VP at the Manhattan Institute and at AEI, and now he's gone back to writing, and he's a senior fellow at Ethics and Public Policy Center, and he's got a book coming out that's going to be important about how we win. And if you think about it, the high things he studied and his knowledge of elections, that might be a big contribution. George Nash, like myself, is another old man. Probably not as old as I am, though. He too, has an Ivy League education. Always suspected him because of that. He went to Amherst and Harvard. He has a PhD in history. And he's a scholar. He's one of the great scholars in this society. He spent 25 years, I think, writing the authorized and authoritative. You know, authorized is when somebody says you can do it who's important. So he's the authorized biographer of Herbert Hoover by the library. But authoritative, because he's a very careful man, and he's poured much of his adult life into this work, and it's done, and it's great. And apart from Herbert Hoover's opinions about Winston Churchill, the book is flawless. And those are accurately represented there. Our last panelist is Christopher Malagisi, who's, unlike Henry, still a boy wonder. He went to American University and then Syracuse. He was a Lincoln Fellow, I'll bet, at the Claremont Institute, or Publius. Lincoln. Were you a Lincoln Fellow?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a Lincoln Fellow. That's a big thing to be. He's Salem Communication, which is a great thing, a big radio network. The college does a lot of business with it and likes them a lot. And they've taken over Town Hall and now the Conservative Book Club, and they're going to revive them and make them really great, and this man runs that. He worked at the American Conservative Union. And by the way, I saw it again today, yesterday. Doesn't David Keene's son look exactly like him? It's amazing. It's frightening. I thought, gosh, David, you've lost 40 years. He worked at the Leadership Institute, and he's an important thing. He's a trustee of this society. And I didn't mention, and I should mention, that we should congratulate George for being elected a distinguished member of the society. I think there are only 8 or 9. And welcome all the panelists. Thank you, and